Today's shiur is Masechta Ksubos Daf Tzadik Vav. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Hei Amud Beis at the Mishnah, the new perek. It says the Mishnah, Amonon Nizoinis Menichse Yisoymen. When a woman's husband passes away, the halach is that her support is from the estate that the Yisoymen of this husband inherit. Masi Deha, and her wages, salary, shalhen, she has to turn over to these yarshim who are supporting her. However, vein chayavim b'kvurasai, the yarshim do not have to pay for the burial of this almana when she passes away. The reason being is that we've learned earlier in the Masechta, the reason that the husband has to pay for his wife's kvura, because if the wife dies before the husband, he does not have to pay out the ksuba. And because he's not paying out the ksuba, he has to pay for the levaya. However, in this situation, where the woman died after her husband, so she is entitled to the ksuba. So although she did not collect the ksuba during all of the years that her husband's yarshim was supporting her, that doesn't mean that that obligation isn't there. And now when she passes away, her yarshim will collect from the yarshim of the husband. As Mefarshim explained, it's not necessarily to be the same group. She could have children who are not the children of her husband, and her husband could have other children, or it could be a mixed group. And therefore, since her children will yarshin the ksuba, they have the obligation to pay for her kvura. Because Yarsheha, Yarshe Ksubasa, Chayavin B'Kvurasa, they have the obligation to pay for Kvura. Rashi makes an interesting statement. Ain't Chayavin B'Kvurasa, he says Rashi Emesa, when she passes away. So all the Mefarshim are asking Rashi, obviously you don't bury people until they die. What's Rashi teaching us? So I saw from the Michas Halazi, he says a very interesting Chiddush LaHalacha. He says, as we just described, if a wife dies before her husband, her husband has to pay for her levaya. What will be the halacha? He discusses that there's a woman who wants a specific burial plot. Her family, whatever reason, she wants this specific burial plot. She's Baruch Hashem alive. Her husband's Baruch Hashem alive. But she would like him to purchase that plot so it should be reserved for her. Can she demand that her husband pay for it? Says Rashi Emesa, the obligation to be makaver, to pay for the levaya, whether it's going to be the husband's or the yarshim or whomever, is only applicable in Mesa once she dies. And she cannot request while she's alive that anybody pay for a burial plot on her behalf. If the husband wants to pay for it, it's fine, but she can't demand. Tysus asks that he does understand what the Mishnah is teaching us. These halachas are halachas that we've learned many times, that the ksuba and the kvura travel together. And whoever gets the ksuba pays for the kvura. So what's our Mishnah teaching us? And actually says it in quite a redundant fashion. So Tysus first wants to suggest that there is no specific Mishnah that teaches us this din. And this should be the source for that din. But Tysus says that if that were the purpose of this Mishnah, then Tysus says we should have also mentioned all the other obligations that travel together. Like we spoke so many times that he gets the payris, but he has to ransom her if she's chas v'shalom kidnapped. So then Tysus attempts to suggest that the Mishnah is trying to teach us that the halach is that if a shemeris yavam passes away while she's a shemeris yavam, that her yavam has to pay for the levaya. Again, Tysus says if that were the din, Tysus refers back to a sugya that we had that discussed that shaila, and if that's what our Mishnah is teaching us explicitly, what's the shaila in that sugya? So Tysus tells us a very big chiddush, which is important in understanding some of the concepts we're going to learn in today's shiur in Mitzvah Hashem. The halacha is that only karka, only real estate that's left over by the husband is mortgaged to the ksuba. Metaltlin, cash, or movable items are not obligated to the ksuba. So what will be the halacha, says Tysus, the following situation. You have a man who passed away, left the wife, the yarshim supported the wife, but that's not the issue. And now this woman dies. Har Yarshim want to claim the ksuba, but there's no real estate. There's only metalplin. They will not get a ksuba because there's nowhere to collect from. So who will be obligated to bury her? Do we say that the husband's Yarshim, who are holding on to the metalplin, should be the ones that have to bury her because they're getting the benefit of not paying the ksuba, or they're not getting a ksuba, they're just not obligated to pay because there's no karka? Tells us Tosfos that that's what the Mishnah is teaching us. That if she dies after the husband, even though realistically she's never gone, her yarshim will never get a ksuba payment because there's no karka to claim it from, the husband's yarshim are not obligated to bury her. But now I saw Shaila, through Rishonim and Achronim, discuss who will have to bury her. So some Rishonim say, and I saw Rabbi Yoshev Paskins this way, that the chiyuv kvura is on her yarshim, as on her, on the relatives, on the seven relatives that have to sit shiva when a woman passes away, when somebody passes away, they have the obligation to bury her, even if they're not getting any Yerusha. The Pnei Yeshua disagrees. The Pnei Yeshua says that the obligation to bury travels together with a Yerusha. If you get a Yerusha, so you have to pay. Nothing's for free in life. But says the Pnei Yeshua, if in a situation like we're describing, where the Yarshim don't get anything, they would not have, the relatives don't get anything, they would not have to pay for the Levaya, and becomes the community's responsibility. We're going to learn the Gemara the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Earlier in our Masechta, on Daf Nun Beis, we learned a machloikis between the Anshe Golo and the Anshe Yehuda. The Anshe Golo say that when a husband dies, the Yosoimim of that husband, the Yarshim of that husband, have the obligation to support the woman as long as she doesn't ask for a ksuba or get remarried. The Anshe Yehuda, on the other hand, say, so in other words, it's in the woman's benefit. The Anshe Yehuda disagree. The Anshe Yehuda say, if the Yosoimim want, they could tell the woman after the husband dies, we'll pay out the ksuba and we don't have to support you anymore. So now ask the Gemara, Ibayilhu, what is the proper terminology to be used in our Mishnah? Nezoinus tanan or ha-nezoinus tanan? Is the proper terminology nezoinus? Nezoinus tanan. Ukan she golu? She has to be supported. V'loi sagadud lo yehavlo. They don't have an option. They must support her until she gets remarried. Adilma ha-nezoinus tanan. With that extra hey, which comes to explain, if the Yosoimim are supporting her, ukan she Yehuda, they have the option to support her. And if they support her, the Mishnah tells us that they are entitled to the wages. However, they don't have to support her. Vibayi, because if they want, layavala, they don't have to support her, pay her her ksuba, and you don't have, and the Yosoimim won't have to support. Toshma, Amrav Zeir Amishmul, Mitzias Amona La'atzma. If our Amona finds something in the street, she could keep it. We know we learned earlier in the Masechta that if a married woman finds a mitziah, it goes to her husband. Here says Shmuel that if she is an almana, she keeps it herself. Explains the Gemara. If we're going to say that the Yosoimim do not have to support her, shaper. So we can understand Shmuel's psak. Why? Because what Shmuel is teaching us is that the Yosoimim don't have to support. And we'll explain that Shmuel's indeed referring to such a situation where the Yosoimim decided not to support. Therefore, there's no relationship now between the Almona and the Yosoimim, and the and she keeps her own mitzvah. Eli Amrit Nizainis Tanan, if we're going to say that the Yosoimim must support her, so as the Rishonim explain, so actually the Yosoimim are an extension of their father. So the have a kabal, so they should be the exact same din to them, just like to the husband. Ma baal, just like by the husband, Allah is mitzis yishal baala, that whatever the woman, whatever a wife finds, goes to her husband. Hachanami, the Allah should be mitzis yishal yarshim. Why is Shmuel saying that it doesn't go to the yarshim? It's la'atzma. So the Rishonim ask, why is Shmuel focusing on mitziah versus than wages? He should have been speaking about the wages and saying, since the Yosoimim aren't supporting her, she keeps her wages. Aren't wages more common than mitziah? So the Rishonim say beautiful teretz. Wages and support is something that we understand travel together. So obviously, if they're not supporting her, then they're not entitled to her wages. But as we learned earlier in the Masechta, Metzia is not connected to support. So we would perhaps think that even if they're not supporting her, they should be entitled to the Metzia. Teaches us Shmuel, and the Havamina at least, that no, they don't travel together. And Metzia, if she's not getting supported, is her own. So now the Gemara is asking, if our Mishnah follows the opinion of the Anshei Golol, and Shmuel follows the opinion of Anshei Golol, why is the halacha that she keeps her own Metzia? Answers the Gemara, La'olam emelach nezaynus tanan. She has to be supported. Just why don't they get the Metzia? Answers the Gemara, Tamamai omer rabbanu Metzias ish labala. Why did Chazal institute that what a woman finds goes to her husband? To Tlahav eva. As we've learned earlier, we don't want a situation of resentment between the husband and the wife. If the wife finds something valuable and he can't use it, there'll be a resentment. But that's between her husband and the wife. Hani Tlahav eva. And the way the Mefarshim explained the Gemara is very nicely. There are two definitions of eva. One is resentment. That means, the simplest way of explaining it, is regarding support. If a husband has to support his wife, pay for all of her needs, and then whatever she earns, she'll keep, it's going to cause resentment. I'm paying and I'm not getting anything back in return. But there's another type of eva. Eva of ktata. We want to keep shalom bayis in the home. So if a woman's going to find something valuable, she'll win the lottery, and she'll say, you're not allowed to have anything from this, what will that do to the Shalom Bayis? It'll obviously adversely affect the Shalom Bayis. So Chazal, who were concerned about Shalom Bayis, said she should keep, he has to get the Metzia also. But here we're not referring to husband and wife. We're speaking about the husband's Yarshim and the wife. There's no Shalom Bayis to be concerned about. And that's why Chazal said, Metzias Isha Ba'atzma. Says the Gemara, Amr Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina, Kam Malacha She'isha Ois Labala. And we learned earlier in the Masechta, the Mishnah, the Gemara, identify different melachis, different things that a wife has to do on behalf of her husband. Amana ois l'yarshim, the same then applies for the Amana to the Yarshim. Chutz mezigas akois, v'atzos mita, v'chatzos panav yad raglay. Making the bed, washing him, pouring the cup. And I saw the Shamat Tzion Balocha explains this Gemara very beautifully. He says, why do these actions not have to be done by an almana for the Yarshim? So he explains, because these actions bring a certain level of closeness. We don't want to create that type of a relationship between the almana and the Yarshim. Says Shem Tzion Balocha, according to that, it would only be a problem if the Yarshim were males. So we don't want to have a situation between the husband, between the male Yarshim and the almana. But let's say the Yarshim of the husband were women, so we don't have to be concerned about that. Then, according to that pshat, the Amana would even have to do these things on behalf of the female Yarshim. But then the Sharm Tzion Balacha quotes the Shita Mukubetzes, who says there's a different explanation of Gemara. These acts are really somewhat menial. Go washing somebody's feet. Go drawing a bath for him. So a husband and a wife, who we want to develop this close relationship, that's what husband and wife do for each other. However, we don't expect an almana to do that on behalf of the Yarshim. And therefore, even if the Yarshim are females, and we don't have to be concerned about any improper relationship forming, there's no reason, and it's not no reason to tell the almana that she has to do this on behalf of the Yarshim, even if they're female. Says the Gemara, Om Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Kol melacha she'eved oisa l'rabbi, every melacha that ever kanani does for his Rebbe, Talmud oisa l'rabbi, a Talmud has to do for his Rebbe, chutz me'taras minol, except for untying the shoe. Why untying the shoe? Not. So as the Rishonim explain, because we're concerned that if somebody sees me untying my Rebbe's shoe, they're going to say, I must be an Eved Kanani. But that's what an Eved Kanani typically does. So my yichus will be called into question. Therefore, Chazal said, I don't have to untie the shoe. Therefore, says Rava, Loya Maron El Makum Shema Kirnesoi. This was only said in a place where people don't know who I am. And people could come be concerned that I'm an Evakanani. Ava Bamakum Shema Kirnesoi, where people know who I am and they know that I'm not an Evakanani, Leslambar is nothing to be concerned, and a Talmud can untie his Rebbe shoe. Continues Rav Ashi in saying, or Makum Shema Kirnesoi, even if people don't know who I am, Nami Loya Maron, El Delay Monach Tfilin. It's only a concern if I'm not wearing tefillin. Av monach tefillin, if I'm wearing tefillin. So it's obvious that I'm not an Ever Kanani. Again, less lumbar than I could take off the shoes. So according to this, this is why Taisus and Rashi understand the Gemara, Ever Kananim don't wear tefillin. So if I'm wearing tefillin, I'm obviously not an Ever Kanani. As Taisus, a Gemara that we learned in Daf Chav Ches, I don't know if you remember it, the Gemara in Daf Chav Ches says that Avon Kananim did wear tefillin. So why is the Gemara saying here that the fact that I'm wearing tefillin is a proof that I'm not an Ever Kanani? The Gemara in Daf Chav Ches says that Avon Kananim do wear tefillin. So Taisa says, even if Avon Kananim wear tefillin, they don't wear tefillin all day long. They only wear tefillin an hour or so a day, like we wear by davening. And everybody else in those times wore tefillin all of the time. Asked some cipher, now he doesn't understand the Gemara. He says, if Taisus is agreeing that Avodim Kananim wear tefillin an hour a day, so why is someone who's wearing tefillin allowed to take off his Rebbe shoe? Why should there not be a concern that I'm an Ever Kanani, and this happens to be the hour of the day that I wear tefillin, that I'm taking off my Rebbe shoes? So the Chasam Sofer says a beautiful yesoid in Hilchas Tefillin. He says the following. He says, a person who wears tefillin all day long is allowed to do everything he wants while he's wearing tefillin. The Gemara says the only thing he's not allowed to do is not allowed to carry out the garbage. Because typically in those days they carried out the garbage by putting it on the head. So you shouldn't have on the same head garbage and tefillin. But that's a person who wears tefillin all day. A person who wears tefillin only an hour a day, and this is why it's relevant to us, like us, that we only wear tefillin when we daven, doesn't have a heter to do anything else while he's wearing tefillin. Because why is the halacha that somebody's wearing tefillin allowed to do other actions? Because if you're wearing tefillin the whole day, you're never going to be able to do anything if you're not allowed to do anything else in tefillin. But if you're only wearing tefillin an hour a day, then you should only wear your tefillin and not do anything else. So if I'm taking off my Rebbe's shoes while I'm wearing tefillin, it must be that I'm not an Ever Kanani. Because an Ever Kanani, Taisa says, only wears his tefillin for a short amount during the day. A person who wears tefillin only for a short amount of time during the day may not do anything else while he's wearing the tefillin. Continues the Gemara. Amar Reb Chiya bar Abba Amar Reb Yochanan. Kol hamineya talmidei melashamshay. Whoever withholds his talmidim from serving him. And there's two pshatim in melashamshay. Some say, very simple pshat, melashamshay, actually servicing the Rebbe. Another pshat melashamshay is that, you know, you can learn from a Rebbe, you can listen to a shir. But there's also God l'shimushay yoysim l'limudai, observing what your Rebbe does, learning from his action. And if a Rebbe says, no, I come in, I give my shir, and that's it, ki'ilu m'manei men chesed. It's holding back from him a very important thing. Nema l'mas mireyu chesed. So Rashi says two pshatim. One pshat is l'mas mireyu, somebody who withholds from his Reyehu, from his Talmud, to service him, is he's withholding from him a chesed. Then Rashi says another pshat. He says, this is a pasuk in Iyov. The pasuk in Iyov says before this, for Toshia nitcha mimeni, that we lose our wisdom, says the pasuk. For Toshia nitcha mimeni. You know why Talmidim don't have atzlacha in their learning? Because lamas mireyu chesed, because the rebbe's don't let them service them. But I saw grad la'aloch lamaisa. Here we're seeing that one's talmud is called reyehu, his friend. There's a shayla in the paiskim on Purim. If one can be mekayim the mitzvah shloich manis by giving shloich manis to his rebbe, because it says in the Megillah shloich manis l'reyehu, is your rebbe your friend? He's your rebbe. He's not your friend. But our Gemara says, the pasuk here does describe the relationship between a Rebbe and a Talmud as Reyehu. And from here the pasuk will say, you can mekayim mitzvah shloich manis by giving shloich manis to your Rebbe. Continues the Gemara. Rav Nachman by Yitzchak Amar af parik b'menei Yerushimayim. if a Rebbe doesn't allow his Talmidim to service him, it causes that the Talmidim should not have Yerushimayim. Shenema v'yira shaka yazoi, he will not have Yerushimayim. And the Mefarshim give various reasons why Chazal was so concerned about Gol l'shimusha yosem l'mudai, that a Talmud should be allowed to service his Rebbe. One pshat is a very practical level. By observing your Rebbe, you will know how to act properly. The Mefarshim quote a Yerushalmi, Masechta Nazir. The Yerushalmi says Masechta Nazir, Rabbi Kiva was once walking on the way, and he found a Meis Mitzvah. So he picked up the Meis Mitzvah and carried him to the cemetery. Rabbi Lezer and Yeshua meet Rabbi Kiva, and they tell him, the halach is, we've discussed this, Meis Mitzvah, Kaina Makaimai. Meis Mitzvah, where he's found, should be buried. So Rabbi Kiva says, you see, I, Rabbi Kiva, we know, started learning Torah late. We learned the Gemara Masechta Ksubas. Did not have the good fortune of spending so much time of learning Torah by Rebbe, of observing a Rebbe. I never observed this, and that's why I didn't know what to do. That's one pshat. I saw another pshat from Rabbi Aaron Kotler. Rabbi Aaron Kotler says that learning is not just learning, but learning is supposed to develop a commitment to Torah. That can only be received by observing and developing a relationship with a Rebbe. In fact, I saw that the Maral says that Chazal are teaching us that there's a special hatzlacha that one receives by having a connection, by developing a connection to his Rebbe. That flaw says a different pshat. The Torah says, Ubas Tzidbak, the one should cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Gemara asks, V'chesh Lidbak, is one able to cling to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, V'aloy Eish Achluhu, there's no tangible Hashem that we could connect ourselves to. Ela Hadbek B'Talmidei Chachamim. Connect yourself to Talmidei Chachamim, and you mekayim the mitzvah by Tzidbak. That's why, God l'shimushay, we have to connect ourselves to Talmidei Chachamim to be mekayim this mitzvah. And in fact, I saw from the Panim Yafos, he explains a question that a lot of Mefarshim ask. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe, Rabbeinu, to build a Mishkan. Yet, if we look in Parashat Truma, Parashat Tzava, we see that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do most of the work. Did very little. There were other people, the Bezalel, Eliyahu, all of Klal Yisrael were very involved in building the Mishkan. The question is, how did Moshe Rabbeinu give up this opportunity? Says the Panim Yafos. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Rebbe of all of Klal Yisrael. He had the mitzvah of building the Mishkan. But here he was prepared to give up the opportunity to do that mitzvah, that the rest of Klal Yisrael, who all his Talmidim, should fulfill the mitzvah of being Mishamish, their Rebbe, Moshe Rabbeinu, so that they could have this chesed and that they could come to Yerushalayim. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Loza, Amonash Atavs Metaltlin. As we've been discussing, when a husband dies, there are two different obligations that the estate of the husband has to the Amona. One is support, Mezainis, and one is Ksuba. Says Rabbi Lezer, Amona Shatas Metaltlin B'Menesel, Amona who goes and seizes Metaltlin, and as Mefarshim explained, we've quoted the Takonas HaGoinim that says that nowadays, not only are Karka mortgaged to the Ksuba and to the Mezainis, but even Metaltlin. But our Gemara is referring to pre the Takonas HaGoinim, so the Metaltlin are not mortgaged to the Mezainis, and she goes and seizes those Metaltlin. The loch is Masha Tafsa Tafsa. It's acceptable. However, there are a number of qualifications that the Rishonim make. One qualification that they make is that she has to be one seizing it. It cannot be done through a shliach. Another point that they make is something that we've discussed earlier in the Masechet at length. She has to grab it, she has to seize it from Rishus HaRabim. Seizing it from Rishus HaYochid is not going to be acceptable because once it's in the Simta, it's already the Yisoyimims. There's also Machloikis Rishonim. At what point will the Tfisa be effective? Some Rishonim say that the Tfisa has to be done while the husband was alive. Other Rishonim suggest that the Tfisa could be acceptable even after the husband passes away. So says the Gemara, Manasha Tafsa Metaltlin B'Zanisel, Masha Tafsa Tafsa. Tanya nami hachin, so too do we learn in Braisa. Almana shatas matatla bezoina sao, masha tafsa tafsa. V'chen ki osra avdimi, omer, mais bekalosa shereb sapsi, the daughter-in-law of Shapsi, whose husband passed away, shatafsa daski malay mas, she seized a bag full of cash for her mezoinas, v'loi hoya koyach b'yak chamim l'hoitzim yoda, to take it away from her. Says Ravina, Amar Ravina, v'loi amaron, when do we say that tefisa is acceptable, el lemezoini, if she's seizing it to get her support, avil ksuba, if she's seizing it to receive a ksuba, mafkinim ena. That is unacceptable. And the Rishonim explain, why do we treat mezoinis different than ksuba? So Rishonim say a beautiful pshat. The halacha is like this. Ksuba, even if the husband sold property and she comes to collect the ksuba and there's no assets left, she could go to the lekuchas who purchased those properties. For mezoinis, she can't go to the lekuchas. So a woman is at a much greater disadvantage in being able to collect mezoinis than in being able to collect ksuba. Therefore, Chazal said, gave her this dispensation and say tefisa helps for mezoinis and not for ksuba. Maskla Marberavashi asked Marberavashi and Ravina, Maishnal ksuba de mekarka de loy matatli? Why by ksuba do you only allow collection from a karka not from a tatlin? Mezoinis should have the same din, that it should be mekarka de loy matatli. Therefore, he disagrees, Marberavashi, and he says, El mezoinai, just like by mezoinis, we're learning, my the tafsa tafsa, what she seized is acceptable. Hachanami l'ksuba is the same din. Omle Rav Yitzchak ba Naftali l'Ravina, hachi amri mishmei de Ravak avaseich, they said like you, that did make a difference between mezoinis and ksuba. Says the Gemara, Omle Rav Yoach mishmei de Rav Yoach ben Zimmer. So as we're learning, the halachi is that a woman is entitled to support a Mishnah taught us from the estate of her husband. Says the Gemara, Amana Shashasa Shtayim Vishloy Shonim. If a woman waited 2 or 3 years, V'loy Tava Mezoinis, she never asked for her Mezoinis. If the Mezoinis, she loses that, right, she loses that payment by her not requesting it. So Rishonim make a number of points. The Ramban says that this Gemara is only referring to an Amana, and we'll understand it better in a moment. However, an Eishes Ish, if a woman, a married woman, who we're learning, just spoke about it today, is supported by her husband, if an Eishes Ish foregoes asking her husband for mezoinis for one day, she loses that. She can't ask for back pay. However, the Ritva says, when is this Gemara applicable? Says the Ritva, if the woman just didn't ask for her mezoinis, an Eishes Ish, even one day, and an Almana 2-3 years. But let's say the woman didn't ask for it, but she went and borrowed money on the basis telling the person she's borrowing money from, I'm borrowing money from you because I'm going to get this payment and I'll be able to pay you back. There the halacha is different. And there the halacha is, even if she didn't request the payment, when she's entitled to ask for it any time, and she's supposed to get it, and she pays back what she borrowed. Ask the Gemara the obvious question. Hash to shtayim ibda, sholosh meboy. If we're saying that if she didn't ask for her mezoinis after 2 years, she loses them. Certainly after 3 years. So what does the Gemara say, 2 or 3 years? Answer the Gemara like Kasha. Kambani kambi shira. And the way the Mefarshim explained the Gemara is very simple. It's uncomfortable for Almana to go to the Yisoyimim and request the mezoinis. So she tries to avoid doing it. So a wealthy woman who has her own assets pushes it off for 3 years. If she waits more than 3 years, we say she certainly was meichel, their obligation to her. A poor woman can't wait 3 years, and therefore she only waited 2 years, we say she certainly forgave that obligation. Inami, kamba prutz, kamba tsnua. And as the Shema Tzion Baruch explains, prutz and tsnua is not the typical definition of prutz and tsnua that we have. Prutz and tsnua usually refers to a woman's behavior in moral issues. Here, prutz is somebody who's a little more chutzpedig, and tznu is more edel. A woman is more chutzpedig, so you're not ashamed to ask. So if you didn't ask for 2 years, it must be that you forgave. A woman who's a little more refined, again, she's embarrassed to ask, will wait longer. There are mafarshim that I saw that actually say that this is, that these two terutzim should be combined. You have to take all of the factors into consideration. You have to look at how much money she has to has. You have to look at her personality and thereby judge what the situation is. However, says Amar Rava, Loya Maron Ela Mafreya. And we're saying that if she didn't ask, she loses it. That's only that she can't request back pay. But the fact that she didn't ask these years and therefore loses her rights to that money has nothing to do with the future. Avul Haba Yeshla. But from now on, she's certainly entitled to be supported. Ask the Gemara. By Rabbi Yochanan, Yisoy Ma'am Nesananu, V'hiyayim Eres Loi Natalti. So Rashi explains the Gemara this way. Right? The Yisoyim come and say that we gave the woman, the wife, our father's Amana, the payment from his Zionist at the beginning of the year for the whole year. And she says, I never received it. The Gemara's question is, Amila Havi Raya. Who has to bring a Raya? That's how Rashi explains it. Tosfos and most Rishonim vehemently disagree with Rashi. Because they say, the halacha is, Ein Achem Masa Bezdin Klum. And Bezdin says that Yisoyim have to support the wife. They can't come and say that they already gave her payment up front. Therefore, they explain that the Gemara's situation is as follows. We're dealing that it's at the end of the year. And the woman comes and says, I didn't ask you for mezainis the whole year. Now I want you to give me a payment for the entire year's mezainis, for the past year. And the Yisoyim say, we already paid you. Now the Gemara's question is, Amila Havi Raya. What is the crux of the question? The crux of the question is, we know throughout Shas, the halach is, Hamotz Mechaveri Olav Haraya. That whoever's holding on to the money, if you want to schlep money away from him, you have to prove that he owes you the money. The question here is, who is the one that's considered in possession of this money? Do you sign him or the amana? Do we say, Nichsi Becheskes Yasmi Kaimi? That the money is considered in the possession of the Yisoyimim, va'amana lo havi raya, or duma, nechsi b'cheskes amana kaimi. We consider the amana to be in possession of these assets, va'yisoyim lo havi raya, that they paid her already. So there's two important points to discuss. One question that the Rishonim discuss is a very simple question. If the Yisoyimim have to bring a raya, that they paid her, that's a raya that's easily brought. But bring the canceled check. But how do you prove a negative? How does the amana prove that she didn't get money? How do you prove a negative? So Rishonim say that the only proof that is at the woman's disposal, if the proof is her burden, they say, is that she would have to bring Edom that heard the Yisoyimim say that we did not pay our amana. That's the only proof that she could use. Then the Achronim ask a very fundamental question. They don't understand the Gemara Shaila. Who inherits the estate? The Yisoyimim. So obviously, they're in possession of the assets. So they ask, what's the Gemara Shaila? Who is the possessor of the estate? It's obvious it's the Yisoyimim. How could the Gemara consider any other option? So the Avni Meluim approach is that since we know that the obligation for the husband's estate to support the wife when she's an amana, is a Tanai Bezin, concept that we discussed many times. That gives her a stronger position than anyone else, and therefore, even if they're actually holding on to the money, but since she has this Tanai Bezin on her side, that makes it like it's, she's in possession. That's how the Avni Meluim explains the Gemara. Rabbi Aaron Cutler has a different approach. He explains the following. We know the halach is, Ein Nefram Menichsi Yisayim El Bishvua. That means, if someone passed away, and he owed someone else money, and the person, the creditor, comes to the estate for payment, he has to make a shvua if he's going to be able to collect the debt owed to him. However, there's an exception to that rule, and that's an almana. Almana, when she comes to collect, under typical circumstances, comes to collect mezainis, comes to collect the ksuba, doesn't have to make a shvua. Says Reb Aaron, from here we see that her position is a very strong position. Because otherwise she should have to make a shvua. That's why the Gemara is considering that she's considered the person holding on to the estate and she and the Yisayim have to prove that they paid her. Toshma, the Tani Levi, we learned in a Braisa. Amana Kozman Shalinissis, and Amana until she gets remarried, Al Yisayim Levi Raya. It's the Yisayim's obligation to prove that they paid her support. But once she's Nissis, Alel Levi Raya. So that's a very straight answer. But Rav Sima Bar Ashi wants to suggest that the answer to this question is actually a machloikis tanon, ketanoi. Mecheres v'kesevis, the Braisa says, that let's say the Yisoyimim are not doing what they're supposed to. They're not giving her the mezoinis. They're not giving her the ksuba. Says the Braisa, mecheres v'kesevis, she sells off the assets. She sells off their assets. And she writes, Eilu Mezoinus Mecharati, what she sells on because she's asking for Mezoinus, she writes that these were sold for Mezoinus, Eilu Ksuba Mecharati. And when she sells for a Ksuba payment, she indicates were for Ksuba. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. That's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Rabbi Yossi Yomer, Mecheres V'Ksuba Stam. She doesn't have to articulate in the Shtar why she's selling what for what. The Ken Karchayofa, and that's an advantage that she has, that she doesn't have to explain what she sold for what. So the Gemara wants to suggest, Maila Bahokamufki. What's the basis of the machloikus of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi? Rabbi Yehuda, Dava Boiler Frushe, Rabbi Yehuda that says that the woman who's selling off the assets of her husband has to articulate what is the point of the sale. He holds Sovan Nechsi Becheskus Yasmikaimi. They're considered the Yisoyimim's assets. And therefore, Valamona Lavi Raya, if she's going to tamper with those assets, she has to be very clear what she's doing. And Rabbi Yossi, on the other hand, holds Loi Brayel Frushi, that she doesn't have to explain, because he holds Nichsi Becheskus Amona Kaimi, they consider the Amonis, Val Yisamim Lavi Raya, and therefore she doesn't have to go through the bother of explaining herself. Says the Gemara Mamai, who says that that's the way to explain? The Machloikus of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Yossi, Dilma de Kula Amon Nichsi Becheskus Amona Kaimi. Really, everybody will really hold that the Amona is in control. And if the Yisoyim are claiming that they already paid her, it's the Yisoyim's obligation to prove it. Al Yisoyim Lavi Raya. So, if so, why did Rabbi Yehuda say that the Almana has to go through the great bother of explaining what she sold for what? Because Rabbi Yehuda ate a toy of Kamashmon. Rabbi Yehuda is giving her good advice. If she, says Rabbi Yehuda, according to the Gemara's explanation, will not explain why she's selling what she's selling for, people will think that everything she took from the Yisoyimim was all for support for day-to-day life. And they'll say it's a huge amount of money. And they'll say she's a woman, to use the common terminology, high maintenance. She needs a lot. And let's remember, explained the Mefarshim, this woman's an almana. She wants to get remarried. And if she gets this reputation that she's an expensive woman, it costs a lot to support her, nobody's going to want to marry her. That's why Rabbi Yehuda is telling her, articulate that you're not only asking for mezoinus, it's also ksuba payment, so it's not that you're so expensive to support. And the Gemara proves that's pshat. Dilay temahachi, harder by Rabbi Yochanan, this that we, Rabbi Yochanan asked, is it considered in the Amona's possession? Or are the assets considered in the Yisoyim's possession? Tishlema Masnisen. We're going to learn a Mishnah Mitzvashem tomorrow. The Mishnah says, Mecheres L'Mezoinus Shelo B'Bezdin, when she could take and sell off the Yisoyim's assets, even without Bezdin, the Ksevis Eilu Mezoinus Mecharti, but she should write why she's selling what. Now, as Rashi explains, a Braisa, we could say, Rabbi Yochanan asked a Shaila, and he wasn't familiar with the Braisa, and that's why he didn't have the Braisa to answer. But if a Mishnah, Rabbi Yochanan knew all the Mishnayos. So if, when the Mishnah or a Braisa say that a woman has to express clearly when she's selling Yisoyim's assets, why she's selling them, and that's a proof that they consider in the possession of the Yisoyimim, why didn't Rabbi Yochanan bring a raya from the Mishnah, that the Mishnah teaches us on the Tzadik Zayin Amabez, the next blot, that she has to articulate why she's selling it. The fact that Rabbi Yochanan didn't bring a raya from the Mishnah, why? Because he's saying that the Mishnah is not saying that she has to do it because the nechasim are considered in the Yisoimim's possession. It's only because of an Eitz HaTov that she shouldn't get this bad reputation. Why can't we bring a proof from the Mishnah? Because we're going to explain that the Mishnah is only Eitz HaTov Kamashmalan. Hachinami, so too will I explain Rabbi Yehuda of the Braisa that he's only an Eitz HaTov Kamashmalan, but not to say that Rabbi Yehuda really means that the Yisoimim, that it's in the possession of the Yisoimim. It could very well be considered in the possession of the Almanim. Tysus asks, why didn't the Gemara bring the Mishnah right away? Why did the Gemara first bring the Braisa and then bring the Mishnah? If the Gemara could have tried to prove from a Mishnah, isn't a Mishnah stronger than a Braisa? So Tysus answers as follows. Tysus says, the Mishnah, the Gemara always thought, was only giving us an Eitz HaTov. The Braisa that starts with Machlokes, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, seemed to point that it was more than just an Eitz HaTov. And that's why the Gemara thought that maybe the Braisa is an answer to Rabbi Yochanan and Shaila. Says the Gemara, just like the Mishnah we can explain, is only Rabbi Yehuda's, the Mishnah is only giving her good advice, so too we explain that Rabbi Yehuda is only giving her good advice, and we don't have an answer to our Shaila. Inami, another way of answering this question, says the Gemara, the Kulam Nichse Becheskes Yasmi Kaimi. Everybody can really hold that it's considered in the possession of the Yisoimim. So if it's considered in the possession of the Yisoimim, why does Rabbi Yossi hold that she doesn't have to explain herself when she sells off the Yisoimim's assets? Vanatam Rabbi Yossi, could a Bayi Kishisha. Rabbi Yossi follows the same understanding as a Bayi Kishisha did. Dama Bayi Kishisha. Moshe Rabbi Yossi L'mad Dava Daimi. How do we explain Rabbi Yossi's position? V'shchimer Hashem Atanum Asayim Zuz L'ploini B'choivi. We had a situation where Shchimera, he doesn't have to go through a formal kinyan, was laying, and unfortunately, very close to death, and there was a person that he owed money to. And he says I want to give that person a gift of $200. I also owe him $200. This person who's owed the money, Ratzah B'chayv Natlan, Ratzah Matana Natlan, now has a choice. He could take that $200 from the Shchimera and say, that's the matana, that's the gift. Has nothing to do with the debt. Im matana notlan, lekach yofa kaychei. Now, if he takes it as a gift, he still keeps the debt. So to here, by not articulating that she's taking it for the ksuba, she could say that all the money that she received for selling off the assets of the Yisoimim were all for payment of mezainis, and she still will be entitled to full ksuba payment if she could prove that she used all that money only for mezainis. So in other words, what Rashi explains, Rabbi Yossi could well agree that it's considered in the Yosim's possession, but it's the smart thing for the woman not to talk too much. But asks Rashi an obvious question. If it's considered nechse b'cheskes yasmi, and the Yosim have the upper hand, so asks Rashi, why should we not be concerned that the Yosim and her will now have a disagreement? They'll say that the money you got for the sales for the ksuba, and she'll say it was for mezainis. It was saying that the Yosim are considered the possessors of the money. Why won't they win that in Torah? Says Rashi, what she should do, she has to come to the Daf Yomi to know all of this. What she should do is when she sells the assets, she shouldn't put it into the shtar, but she should tell Adam that I'm selling it for mezainis. So if she ends up having a din Torah with the Yisoimim, she'll be able to bring those Adam and say that that was done for mezainis.